Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Go Premanande. So what did we discuss last week in our class?
So that when Putna's body was cut into pieces, it was giving out very sweet fragrance because it was touched by the Lord. The same thing that comes in contact with the Lord becomes effervescent and fragrant.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Anything else?
By giving an offering food to Krishna, the food gets purified.
Yeah, same point.
And then you change properly. You're getting.
Yeah. Okay, any other point?
First time we see that in any preparation that Putra did the service to the Lord, even though it was unfavorably, Lord took only the excess and he delivered. And so far from the water speak of the devotees, who are doing so many devotion service, and that might take care of them.
Good. Anything else? So tonight we'll begin the seventh chapter. What is the seventh chapter called?
Killing of
Trinavarta. So first of all, before Trinavarta is killed, we hear about the killing of Shakatasura. Yeah. So we'll go from verses 1 to 17, and you'll hear about Shakatasura entering into Vrindavan and being killed by Krishna. So, text number 1 to 17, chapter 7. King Parikshit said, "My Lord Shukadev Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord, but Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes, and one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Attachment for Him and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord." So read the first paragraph. So, Janesh, you want to?
As stated in the Prema Vivarta, Krishna Bahirmukha Aya Bhoga Vanchakare Nikatastha Maya Hare Japatiyatane. Our material existence in Maya or illusion, in which we desire different varieties of material enjoyment and therefore change to different varieties of bodies. Ramayam sarvabhutani mayaya asamati kleshara asharya. As long as we have these temporary bodies, they give us many varieties of tribulation. Adhyapika, adhivautika, adhidaivika. This is the root cause of all suffering. But this root cause of suffering can be removed by revival of our Krishna consciousness. All the Vedic literature presented by Vyasadeva and other great sages are therefore intended to revive our Krishna consciousness, which begins to revive with Shravanam Kirtan, Shravanam, Ushunantam Sokata Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Vedic literature exist simply to give us chance to hear about Krishna. Krishna has different avatars or incarnations, all of which are wonderful and which arouse one's inquisitiveness. But generally, such avatars as Matsya, Kurma and Varaha are not as attractive as Krishna. First of all, however, we have no attraction for hearing about Krishna, and this is the root cause of our suffering.
Any points there?
Perhaps some of the other devils, the attraction to hear the glories and pastimes of the Lord, even though one is in the material condition. So, because the root cause of the material condition is no chant and group, the way to get rid of the suffering is to hear the pastime.
Yeah, that's good. Any other points?
Because we don't want to hear about Krishna Katha, so the threefold miseries, they trouble us. And that takes us more away from Lord. And we keep on suffering.
In this material world. So, any other points? That is true. So, why are we suffering in this material world?
Because we have a tendency to
desire.
Prabhupada said because of desire. So, what keeps us in the material world is material desire. And what liberates us from the spiritual, from the material world is spiritual desire. So, Krishna consciousness is about changing our desire from material to spiritual. So, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, param jishtva nivartate. Param jishtva means you have to get a superior taste, or develop a superior desire and develop pleasure in serving Krishna. And when you develop pleasure in serving Krishna, then you become unattracted to material activities. That is the only way to give up material activities. You can't give them up just by renunciation alone. Just like I was reading yesterday, or today, might have been this morning. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that, you know, one has to give up these different types of material desires. But it's not a strong enough impetus just to give up the material desire unless you get something superior. You can say, well, I should give up this and I should give up that. But if you don't have something superior, if you don't have attraction to Krishna, then you can't maintain your renunciation. You can say, well, I'll give up this thing, but you'll just go back to the same thing again unless you have something superior. So that is the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Now, how does our desire change? How do we change from material desire to spiritual desire? Prabhupada says in the purport, it's by shravanam kirtanam. It's by hearing and chanting about Krishna. When you hear about Krishna, when you chant about Krishna, then you lose your material desires. It becomes cleansed from the consciousness, and one develops spiritual aspiration. So a devotee needs to absorb himself as much as possible in hearing and chanting about Krishna. That is our process. So Krishna is, as the verse points out, Krishna is all attractive. And Prabhupada is saying that we need to develop Vasudev Katha Ruchi, or a taste for hearing about Krishna. And Prabhupada will explain in the next paragraph how there are many incarnations of Krishna, but Krishna's pastimes are more powerful. Why are they more powerful? Because everything Krishna does, he does to the topmost degree. He has more sweetness than his other incarnations. He shows more Aishwarya than his other incarnations. He shows everything on a greater scale. So if it's opulence, there's more opulence in Krishna. If there's sweetness, there's more sweetness in Krishna. If it's beauty, there's more beauty in Krishna. So Krishna has all the qualities to the topmost degree. Therefore, of all the incarnations, Krishna is the most attractive of all the incarnations. So Maharaj Parikshit, he's heard about all the other incarnations, but now he's saying, I want to hear exclusively about Krishna. So you'll see when you study Bhagavatam, because we studied the other nine cantos, the Bhagavatam has 330 chapters, and 90 chapters are in the 10th canto. So it means the majority of the chapters are in the 10th canto. So most of the Bhagavatam is about Krishna. So now that we've got to the point of hearing about Krishna, Maharaj Parikshit says, now just go into the details. I want to hear everything about Krishna as much as possible. So we need to develop that taste for hearing about Krishna, and particularly about Krishna in Vrindavan, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired. He desired to hear about Krishna in Vrindavan specifically, and he was attached to Krishna in Vrindavan. So by hearing of Krishna in Vrindavan, we develop extreme attachment. And this is the process. The only way to give up your material desires is by developing a transcendental taste for hearing about Krishna through Shravanam and Kirtanam. So, any points?
It automatically creates more interest. You don't have to make effort. The activities are so attractive.
Special attraction. Any other point?
So here by asking Sukadeva Goswami to speak more, Parikshit Maharaj is again and again asking Sukadeva Goswami to speak about Krishna, so that even it arouses Sukadeva Goswami's ecstasy. Because Parikshit Maharaj also knows the heart of Sukadeva Goswami, that he wants to speak. And when the hearer and the speaker both are, it's like milking a cow. When they both are enthusiastic about a topic, then it creates more rasa. So here Parikshit Maharaj is again bringing up the rasas from Sukadeva Goswami.
Good. Anything else? Okay, so read the second paragraph. You done? Jumin and Lily can read. Drobly. Yeah, you read. No, second paragraph. Just get to my room. You know, the blue room in the corner, then in my bag there's to be a group of books. Just bring all the books down for me.
Are especially attractive. From the very beginning of his childhood, Krishna killed Putna, Trinavrata and Shakatashura and showed the entire universe within his mouth. Thus, the pastimes of Krishna, one after the another, kept Mother Yashoda and all the inhabitants of Raja in great astonishment. The process to revive one's Krishna consciousness is Ado Shraddha Tatha Sadhu Sangha. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.4.25. The pastimes of Krishna can be properly received from devotees. If one has developed a little bit of Krishna consciousness by hearing from Vaishnavas about the activities of Krishna, one becomes attached to Vaishnavas who are interested only in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj recommends that one hear about Krishna's childhood activities, which are more attractive than the activities of other incarnations such as Matsya, Kurma and Varaha. Wanting to hear more and more from Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit requested him to continue describing to Krishna's childhood activities, which are especially easy to hear and which create more and more inquisitiveness.
So what are the points there?
Our Krishna consciousness, we have to have sadha as well as sadhusanga.
Yeah, it's being described that we need to hear about Krishna. That's how we lose our attachment to the material world. But specifically, you have to find devotees who themselves are attached to Krishna, and you have to hear from them. So it means if the devotee has attachment to Krishna, then that attachment that he has to Krishna, that will be infused into your consciousness. So that is how it takes place. That is the entire methodology of how to become Krishna conscious. People say, sometimes people ask, how do I become Krishna conscious? And that is the answer. You have to hear from devotees who themselves have attachment to Krishna. And by hearing from those devotees, then you yourself will develop attachment to Krishna. That's the whole process. So, Krishna in this particular chapter, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes some interesting comments. He says that in this chapter, Krishna is showing Aishwarya. Aishwarya means his opulence or his potency. Because Vrindavan is about Madhurya or sweetness. No, not the box. You know my bag on the floor? Yeah, it's in there. There's books in there. So in the Vrindavan Leela, it is full of sweetness, which means Madhurya Ras. But within that sweetness, Krishna has complete Aishwarya. Complete Aishwarya means unlimited potency or opulence. Now, Krishna, generally, he will not show that opulence because Mother Yashoda is there, so he won't show opulence because it is counterproductive in one sense to the mood of Vrindavan, that Krishna will show great opulence. He'll just show that he's like a village person, a relative of theirs, or a friend of theirs. But then, amongst all those pastimes, sometimes he shows Aishwarya to show his supremacy. And because their Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes, because their love for Krishna is so intense, it is not overcome by the Aishwarya. They simply remain fixed on the Madhurya or the sweetness of the relationship. Yeah. That's all it's there.
There's more in the box.
Okay, there's one book missing. Okay, that's not the one. Okay, that's okay. No, because it's a different book. That's annoying. Maybe I'll look to the farm.
Do we have it in our shop?
No, it's a special one. Okay. There's one book I have, which from Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So it defines what all the different demons, what their position is within Krishna's Leela. So Shakadasura gives a definition of what he represents and like that. But I can't find the book. It should be upstairs, I'm sure I brought it, but I'll read it to you tomorrow night. Gives you like a definition of who Shakadasura is like that. So, as is being described here, that when Krishna shows his Aishwarya, because the Madhurya of the Brijbasis is so powerful, it doesn't overcome, or the Aishwarya does not overcome their Madhurya. In other words, they do not forget their relationship with Krishna. And you'll see that in this chapter and also in the next chapter, that the relationship is not forgotten at any time. So we see several things happen in this chapter and then in the next chapter, or it's actually three things happen in this chapter. Shakadasura appears, right, and Krishna destroys Shakadasura. Then Trinavata appears. And at the very end of the chapter, then Mother Yashoda looks into Krishna's mouth and sees the universal form. So especially that pastime shows complete Aishwarya. You know, if you look into someone's mouth and you see the whole universe, that's unlimitedly powerful. But it does not interrupt even for a moment her natural feeling of love for Krishna as a mother. Right? When she sees that, right, she just thinks, oh, I'm hallucinating. She doesn't think, oh, you know, this is God. She just thinks, I'm hallucinating. And then she shakes her head and she looks again and then it's all normal again. So this is the potency of Krishna. So he's showing unlimited Aishwarya to show his supremacy to people like us. But for the devotees in Vrindavan, they don't become distracted by it. They just think, well, if it's true that Krishna does these things, it just makes him more wonderful, that's all. But they're completely absorbed and captivated in their love for Krishna, in their relationship with Krishna. So Vishnu Chakravarti points out that when you hear about any of Krishna's incarnations, like we've heard in all the other cantos, it completely captivates the mind and the heart. But he says it does not deliver prema or love for Krishna as quickly as by hearing directly of his pastimes in Vrindavan. When you hear specifically about these pastimes, it is so sweet, because it is more sweet than the other incarnations. There is a special sweetness in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela that delivers prema much more rapidly, much more quickly. That is the potency of these pastimes. So specifically, we should hear Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan if you want to achieve Vrindavan, if that's your desire or your abhilash. Just like in Mayapur, when they have Tulsi Aarti. And then we say that line. What is the line in the Tulsi Aarti? How's it go? Yeah, how does the whole section go? Morae abhilash, vilas kunja diovas, like that. So, vilas kunja diovas. Vas means I want to reside in the vilas kunj. Vilas kunj means the pleasure groves. Morae abhilash means my desire. So, do they still have that sometimes when they do Tulsi Aarti in Mayapur? There's that. Those older devotees, one of the older ones leads, and the older devotee comes and plays the mridanga. You know who I'm talking about? Yeah, they lead sometimes. You know the one I'm talking about? He works in Prabhupada Samadhi. Yeah, he's been there for years and years and years. Right? And when they come and lead, it becomes like 10 times more ecstatic. When they come and lead. One of this older devotee, he must be nearly 60 years old or something. And he leads the kirtan. This other devotee must be like 60 as well. He plays the mridanga. And when they get to that point, he says, Morae abhilash. Then the other devotee playing the mridanga always says, abhilash. 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 Like desire. Like that. That's my desire. So I always go to the Tulsi Aarti. If I see they're leading, then I just stand right behind them. And every year I just wait for him to say, abhilash. Because then it makes me understand what is Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is about one thing, right? Desire. If you don't have any desire, you don't make any advancement. So we only get to Vrindavan because that's our goal. What is our goal? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly emphasizes the goal is Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was absorbed only in Vrindavan. The moment he took sannyas, he started walking to Vrindavan. And a voice in the sky said, don't go to Vrindavan. It said, you're not ready to go yet. Like that. So that is the goal of our entire sampradaya, is to hear the special sweetness in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. That's the only thing that will attract us away from the material world. But you have to develop a desire to go there. You have to develop a greed to hear about it, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. If you don't have any greed, then you won't go to Vrindavan. But if you want to go to Vrindavan, you have to develop that abhilash, which means a greed or a desire. Any points? We just discussed that. You have to hear from devotees who have that attachment. If you hear from devotees who themselves have attachment to Krishna, you will develop attachment to Krishna. That's the only way. So you don't have any problem because you're initiated by Radhanath Swami. So what's the problem? All you have to do is associate with him. Listen to him. He has attachment to Krishna. He has asakti, attachment. So if you associate with him by hearing or in person, then you can also develop that. That's the process. So, anything else?
Can you also understand that Prabhupada writes here that by hearing the childhood pastimes of Krishna, one develops attraction because they are very attractive. But this pastime is not there in the Goloka. Discussion earlier, this child pastime and only one pastime is only in the Roma. Yeah. So, is it that this pastime is performed for the Lord so that living it can get attracted and go back? Because once you go back, you can have this desire. And one develops to get attached to the
pastime that is not in the Roma. No, but that's not what we're attracted to. What we're attracted to is Krishna's sweetness. Whether he kills a demon or not, that's consequential. We're not attracted to that. We're attracted to Krishna's sweetness. That's the point. We don't get attracted to Krishna as a person. Right. Just say you're really good at football or cricket, right? Say like, what's his name? Tendulkar. Right? So, right, he's the best cricketer, right? Right. So you might, everyone's attracted to him because, you know, he hit the ball everywhere and he did all that. So, you know, 100 centuries, no one else did that. You know, probably no one else will ever do that. So we're attracted, that's his Aishwarya. But you can't really become attached. You know, if you get to meet him, you're not just going to talk about that all the time. Right? You want to get to know the person and you become attached to the person. And you only develop love for a person. You don't love someone because of their cricket ability or their Aishwarya. You love the person because of their sweetness, the madhurya in the relationship, the type of person they are. So we don't become attached to Krishna because he, you know, he kills demons. We become attached to Krishna because of his sweet dealings. Does it make sense? Yeah. Okay. Any other point? Please describe other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality, who appeared on this planet Earth, imitating a human child and performing wonderful activities like killing Putana. So, Prabhupada points out that in all of Krishna's Leela, he displays that he is supreme. That is the difference between Krishna and his other incarnations. Right? He is supreme in beauty. That's why it says he has four traits which are unparalleled, which the other incarnations do not display to the degree that Krishna displays. You know, the sweetness of the flute, right? Venu Madhurya. So it doesn't mean Lord Narayan can't play a flute. Right? Anyone in this world can play a flute. Everyone can learn how to play a flute. Sometimes people say, well, only Krishna plays the flute. It's not that only Krishna plays the flute. Balaram plays a flute. All of Krishna's friends play flutes. Everyone in Vrindavan plays flutes. It's not just Krishna is the only flute player. Sometimes it's like, oh, Krishna, he's the only one who carries a flute in the whole of Vrindavan. Everyone has a flute. But when Krishna plays a flute, right, everyone becomes captivated. Everyone becomes silent. Because when they hear that flute, it is so enchanting, and it is so captivating, and it is so alluring, and it is so powerful that it completely overwhelms people. Because the word Krishna, what does the word Krishna mean? All attractive, but where does it come from? Where does the word Krishna come from? The root of the word is Krishna. Krishna means like forcibly, very forceful, like forcibly taking something. Krishna forcibly, it says when he plays his flute, he forcibly takes the devotees. The flute enters your ear and goes into your heart and grabs you and then pulls you. Because he plays the flute at nighttime, right, in Vrindavan. And when he plays the flute, it goes into the ears of the gopis and goes into their heart and forcibly grabs them and pulls them to him. That's how powerful Krishna is. So that's what makes him different to his other incarnations, because he's more powerful. Because his sweetness is not found in the other incarnations. It's not paralleled. So he is the most attractive of all the incarnations. So everything he does, he takes it to a higher level of pleasure. He's much more powerful than the other incarnations. The others can play flutes, but they can't attract like Krishna can attract. Not the way that Krishna can attract. Because his other one of his other qualities is prema madhurya. But he can attract his devotees, but his other incarnations can't attract his devotees. Although he can attract the other incarnations' devotees. Does it make sense? All right. You know, understand what I mean? So Lakshmi, who is a devotee of Narayan, his other incarnation, she's attracted to him, but the gopis, you'll see later in the canto, when they meet Lord Narayan in the forest, then they're not attracted. They're not overwhelmed by him. They say, where is Krishna? That is there because they're overwhelmed with Krishna. Does it make sense? So Krishna is different to the other incarnations. We have to understand this. It's a subtle point. So, any points? Yes. What about it? It's in the 10th canto. Rasa Leela. Yeah, it must be Yeah. So it must be like 33 or something. Okay. Any other point? Okay. Shukadev Goswami said, when Mother Yashoda's baby was slanting his body to attempt to rise and turn around, this attempt was observed by a Vedic ceremony. In such a ceremony called Uttana, which is performed when a child is due to leave the house for the first time, the child is properly bathed. Just after Krishna turned 3 months old, Mother Yashoda celebrated this ceremony with other women of the neighborhood. On that day, there was a conjunction of the moon with the constellation Rohini. As the Brahmanas, joined by chanting Vedic hymns and professional musicians, also took part, this great ceremony was observed by Mother Yashoda. So, Tarabali, you'd like to read them?
There is no question of overpopulation or of children being a burden for their parents in a Vedic society. Such a society is so well organized and people are so advanced in spiritual consciousness that childbirth is never regarded as a burden or a botheration. The more a child grows, the more his parents become jubilant. The child's attempt to turn over are also a source of jubilation. Even before the child is born, when the mother is pregnant, many recommended ritualistic ceremonies are performed. For example, when the child has been within the womb for 3 months and for 7 months, there is a ceremony the mother observes by eating with neighboring children. This ceremony is called Svada Bhakshana. Similarly, before the birth of the child, there is the Garbhadana ceremony. In Vedic civilization, childbirth or pregnancy is never regarded as a burden. Rather, it is a cause of jubilation. In contrast, people in modern civilization do not like pregnancy or childbirth, and when there is a child, they sometimes kill it. We can just consider how human society has fallen since the inauguration of Kali Yuga. Although people still claim to be civilized, at the present moment, there is actually no human civilization, but only an assembly of two-legged animals.
What are the points there?
Human society has actually, in this matter, become worse than animals, because animals, the mothers are very overprotective of their children. If you see a dog who has given birth and if you even happen to pass by the dog, if you are attacking the children and she comes and bites. In India, especially, such things happen. They're so overprotective of their babies. We never hear them, aborting or anything like that.
Any other point?
People actually claim to be civilized.
Yeah. Yeah, so what causes stable society is when families are integrated. And that's why the social fabric's broken down in society. You see, Krishna is showing the perfect example of everything. He's showing the perfect example of Vedic culture. These days, families are broken down. And they're breaking down more and more. In India also, in Australia, all over the world, families are breaking down. But you'll see, Krishna is showing the perfect example. This is Vedic culture. Culture means how to deal properly in any circumstance. So we see the perfect example of how to deal perfectly with your children. So it is natural. Many people still have this. It's not like it's lost in the world or like that. You know, my mother was very loving towards me. It wasn't like, it's not like all these things are lost. But we just see in Krishna's pastimes, you see the topmost degree. But the point is, unless the families are close, right, there's no social structure. Everything falls apart. And now we see there's so many problems in society, and it's only for one reason. It's because the family structures are falling apart. Because we've left villages. That's really the crux of the matter. You go even where I live, which is in the country, it's rural. People are much more friendly there, generally, than in the city. You know, you go down there, people are much more normal, much more friendly. You know, people smile, they talk and like that. You walk down the street in Melbourne, you stop someone, they're like, what do you want? It's like people are like that. It's like I'm like, and like one of my friends, he was at the farm yesterday. He's a school teacher, and he touched one of the students on the shoulder. You know, just like tapped on the shoulder one of the girls, and then the girl went and reported him and said he's sexually harassing her. And he got called in by the principal, and you know the principal wasn't bewildered. He said, "I know the girl's just saying it," but he said, "Just don't do it." Because he just, yeah, that's all he did. Just like tapped one of the students, just like tapped them on the shoulder. So 20 years ago, when I was in school, yeah, if one of my students had done that, we wouldn't have. One of the teachers did that, we wouldn't have done anything. But these days, it's like you just touch someone, you just look at someone, it's like you're sexually harassing them, or you say the wrong thing. Even Mathura Manaha, he told me, because he's like in his previous work, he's a boss in his company, and he had a female, you know, like employee, like under him. And he said something, and then she went to the higher boss and said, "Oh, he's sexually harassing me." And he wasn't sexually harassing her at all. He just said something, you know, "You did a nice job," or something like that. And then, you know, suddenly it's turned into. So this is the way the society is breaking down the fiber. It's because the villages have been lost, and that's why Vrindavan is teaching us we should be living in a village. So if you want to pass your exam, then you have to move back to village life. Yeah. That will be the success. If you really want to pass the 10th canto, you have to give up your current way of living, because it's destroying everything. That's the problem. But society is just going off into a direction which is failing. Just like before, I was driving up to the farm, and then I was listening on the radio a little bit just to see what's going on in the world. And then Bernie Sanders, he's like the guy in America running to be the president. And he's saying, "Oh, we'll do this and we'll do that," and it all sounds very good, but it's not going to work because they can't get back to the basic fundamental problems, which is society is just living the wrong way. So you see, Vrindavan life, Prabhupada always argues this point, Vrindavan life is the right way to live. And we can only be happy when we're all living in a rural situation and we're all in villages and you know your family, you know your friends, and then you'll be socially happy. Any points?
If you go to a little city, you ask a person, then you don't need to have a trust. They're all very family, even normal family, the whole village or city stays together. I experienced this a little bit. We went in search of someone, and then we know someone said area. Like, for example, this area. Come to St. Kilda, and then ask for a person, they'll tell you exactly.
Yeah, sometimes now we live in the sea, we don't even know who's living next door to us. Sometimes it happens. Yeah.
Yep.
After completing the bathing ceremony for the child, Mother Yashoda received the brahmanas by worshipping them with proper respect and giving them ample food, grains and other edibles, clothing, desirable cows and garlands. The brahmanas properly chanted Vedic hymns to observe the auspicious ceremony. And when they finished, and Mother Yashoda saw that the child felt sleepy, she lay down on the bed with the child until he was peacefully asleep. So Prabhupada makes the same point, basically. The mother is affectionate. What happens when the mother is affectionate? Your mind becomes peaceful. And that's material life. Because material life is stressful, it is full of anxiety. So therefore, if the mother, the father is peaceful and affectionate, then the child becomes peaceful. So Mother Yashoda is just showing us the example, how to be a proper mother. So most of us don't need to learn these things. I mean, we can always improve, but you know, the basic, if you want to become selfless in the material world, then you have children. Because Prabhupada explains that the closest thing to spiritual love, right, in the material world is the mother's love for the child. Because you know, if you want to learn what selflessness is, then you have children, then you have to become selfless. You know? Just like I'm 46 years old. So last year I was 45. I got married and I got a kid. Right? And then now I thought I was quite a selfless person, but now I'm being taught by my daughter, who's my guru, right, what it actually means to be selfless. Right? Because when you have a kid, you know, your life kind of goes out the window. You know, because you want to do something, but then you can't do it when you want to do it or how you want to do it. Because, you know, you have a child there and you have to respect their desires and wishes, and they're very demanding. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Can't do it. It's like, you know, the other day I was reading, you know, I'm sitting down on the couch and I'm reading, you know, trying to study. And my daughter, you know, comes through doing cartwheels through the... I said, you know, I'm trying to read about Krishna. Can you go and do that somewhere else? Like that. So, she, yeah, and then she goes out to the other room and she comes back through again. And then, you know, just because she knows it's annoying me. You know. So that's it. So, you know, then you have to learn to be tolerant. You have to learn to be selfless. These things come. So this is why, for most of us, we need to go through this experience. That's why you need to have children and all these things, because it purifies the consciousness. And also for most devotees, they need to go through marriage as well, because marriage does the same thing. It purifies the consciousness, because you have to learn the only way a marriage can be successful is under one circumstance, right? Is that when you learn to become selfless and you learn compromise. If you don't understand compromise, the marriage won't work. If you understand compromise, then the marriage will be successful. Because what do we call it when you get married? What's it called in Sanskrit? What's the yajna called? Vivaha. Yajna, right? So that literally means, that yajna means to carry a burden expertly. That's literally what marriage means. It means carrying a burden expertly. Right? Just like if you've got a child. You know, your child's like, you know, if you're carrying a child, it's a burden. It's heavy. You know, you have to carry the kid, you know, for 5 kilometers. So you have to carry the child, but you can't drop the child. Right? So you have to carry expertly, but it's a burden. It's a weight. So that's what marriage literally is. It's a weight, but you have to carry that expertly. It means you have to constantly compromise. And that's very good for the devotee, because that teaches the devotee how to become selfless in Krishna's service. Because most of us are very selfish. Anyone here is selfish? Good. Get married and have kids. We bless you to have 10 kids. This is one of my best friends, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu. Bir Krishna Maharaj blessed me. He said, have 10 children. 10. So he just had 3 girls. Got 3 daughters and a wife. And he said, now I'm starting to slow down. he said a while ago, he said, should I have more kids? I said, just keep having them until the desire's gone. Just keep going. You have more and more and more. And when the desire's gone, then you know that's enough. And then you'll become purified. So that's what these institutes. So that's why in Vrindavan we're hearing about these things, right? Motherhood. Now Yashoda's showing us how to be a pure mother, completely selfless to Krishna. Yeah. Krishna tested her. It wasn't like Krishna was like a, you know, well-behaved child. Krishna was very testing, right? Always running off into the other people's houses, you know, stealing things. You know, middle of the night, there's rumors he's always not there. You know, he goes and steals things and he comes back and they say, why have you been doing this? He said, I wasn't even in the area. I wasn't there. So Nimai as well, Lord Chaitanya, when he was young, same thing. He used to go down the Ganges. You know, he was supposed to be at school. He'd go down the Ganges and he'd harass all the brahmanas. And then he'd walk back up the road and he'd have like all ink blotches on him and dust, like he'd been at school. His parents said, why are you at the Ganges and causing trouble to the brahmanas? He said, I was at school the whole time. He wasn't at school. So not easy for his parents necessarily. So this is what the culture is teaching us, how to become selfless. Best is you can just take sannyas and just renounce the whole thing and just dedicate yourself to Krishna. Because we're not ready for that, because we're not selfless enough, then we have to go through purification. So these things are very good if you do them as a devotee. Have kids, get married. It's very purifying as a devotee because it teaches you how to be more selfless to Krishna. That's why Prabhupada says the closest thing to pure devotion in the material world is the mother's love for the child, because it teaches you like that. So these things, if they're done in Krishna's service, they're purifying. Grihastha Ashram Ki.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, God.
He was only 3 months old.
Yeah.
If he was only 3 months old, why is it written that he was due to leave the house for the first time?
It's a particular ceremony when the child begins to roll over, can roll over off the back. Around about 3 months, then they perform a ceremony at that time.
Yeah, but he was not ready to leave the house. That's what you said.
Yeah, it says that there. I'm not sure about the Vedic system like that, because I wasn't brought up in the Vedic system. So but there were ceremonies for all sorts of things. First time that the mother left the house with a child, first time the child turns over. Yeah, 3 months. So. Yeah.
So when he starts turning, then the mother goes out of the house.
Yeah, it says 3 months. I don't, like I said, there may be many rituals. I'm not sure of all the details, but it says that. So around about 3 months, that's when they did this particular ceremony. Okay. The liberal mother Yashoda, absorbed in celebrating the Uttana ceremony, was busy receiving guests, worshipping them with all respect and offering them clothing, cows, garlands and grains. Thus she could not hear the child crying for his mother. At that time, the child, Krishna, demanding to drink the milk of his mother's breast, angrily threw his legs upwards. So, one of Krishna's 64 qualities that you read about in the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is that he is a genius. So what does a genius mean? How does Prabhupada define it?
A person who can accomplish many tasks, many goals.
Yeah, so he does many things at once. So what is he doing here? He kicks his leg, right? And he hits the demon. Because there's a ghost. His name is Shakatasura. Shakata means like the cart, Asura, who entered the cart. He's a ghost, and he came along and entered into the cart. And Krishna saw him there, and he was thinking, I'll drop on Krishna. But Krishna just kicked with his little foot and just smashed the cart apart and killed the ghost, the demon. He fell down on the ground dead. So he did that, but then simultaneously, he just wanted to get attention from Mother Yashoda. Because he wanted her breast milk. So Krishna is like that. Normally when your child wants to have some milk, your child will cry or do like that. But Krishna likes to take everything one step further. Right? So he knocks the whole cart over. It's a big cart as well. It's not a small cart. It's a big cart. And it's full of gold and silver pots. And Krishna just knocks the whole thing with one kick of his foot. He pushes the whole thing over. And the whole thing smashes apart. So this is a genius. A genius means he accomplishes many things by one act. By his one kick, then he's destroyed the demon. He's brought his mother's attention. He increased the love of everyone in Vrindavan for him. Because everyone ran to see, is Krishna okay? Is Krishna all right? So everyone came there. So with one action, he's performed many things. So that's Krishna's supreme nature, or his expert nature. And that's what makes someone a genius, when he's performing many things simultaneously. So, Prabhupada says that many people just think these things are mythology, these pastimes. Oh yeah, Krishna did this, he did that, and it's just stories from some old Puranas or something. But Prabhupada says, no, they're all real. Now, why do we believe them? Because there's a taste within the pastime. There's a relish. But for a non-devotee who has no taste for Krishna or no attraction to Krishna, he will hear what Krishna pushed over a cart and say, what's so attractive about that? Why are you all sitting? Why did you all come here tonight? Are you just hearing about a little boy who just pushed a cart over? What's exciting about that? There's nothing really exciting about that. What's so exciting? Non-devotees, they come here, they'll stay here for 5 minutes, they'll say, what are you guys doing? You come here and you listen about a little boy who's pushing a cart over? I'd rather go and watch the football. They have no attraction, but devotees, we have attraction. Now, where does the attraction come from? It's from bhakti sukriti. For lifetimes of doing devotional service and building up some sukriti, then we have some attachment now to hearing about Krishna. And the perfection of life is to get attachment or ruchi or asakti to hearing about Krishna. We want to hear about Krishna more and more and more, because Krishna is so wonderful. So he doesn't just kick out. This is not like an ordinary cart. There's a demon in the cart. You have to visualize these things. That's why these pastimes, Shravanam and Kirtanam, leads to what? Smaranam. Smaranam means like it's a meditation. You have to visualize these things in your mind. That's what I'm doing today. Like, you know, because I'm, you know, like I'm the 46-year-old Australian guy. You know, everyone else in this country think I must be crazy. But I'm sitting there today and I'm just, you know, preparing this class. I'm visualizing all these things. And when you begin to visualize, you go into the pastimes and you begin to get realizations. Krishna reveals things to you. Right? And that's when it becomes extraordinary. It's not an ordinary thing. It's attractive. It's purifying to the consciousness. And it awakens us to our natural position of being Krishna's servant. So you have to go very deep into these pastimes. When you study the 10th canto, you can't study it superficially. That's why these leelas are very exalted. You can't just superficially study these things. You have to go into it very deep. That's why it says the 10th canto, you have to approach very carefully and cautiously, because it's very exalted subject matter. To understand what this is, the actual transcendental significance of all Krishna's pastimes, takes a very deep level of realization. So you have to study this very seriously.
But you say sometimes that you can't understand everything.
What's that?
You told me once that you can't understand everything.
I say lots of things to you, but it doesn't mean I necessarily mean it when I say it. So. I don't know. Maybe I said something one time, I can't remember. But you can understand these things. You can understand. Krishna says, yeyata mam prapajanti, tamstateva bhajamyaham. As you surrender, then Krishna will reveal. The 10th canto is a test to see how much can be revealed to us is according to how much attachment we develop to Krishna.
It's also amazing to note here that I was listening to a lecture also, and there was a speaker saying that every act of Krishna is celebrated as a festival in Vrindavan. Even if he turns, it's a festival. If he goes out, it's a festival. So every act of Krishna, the Vrajvasis are just looking for opportunities to celebrate Krishna's activities.
Yeah, the whole spiritual world is a constant festival. And even in Vedic culture, it's significant actually, I didn't make this point, but it's significant because in Vedic culture, everything's a festival, even for normal kids. You know, I mean, you know, the kid turns one and then kid turns two and then there's a festival all the time. That's very healthy for society. And that's why a lot of Indian people come and live in Australia. Because you know, you're just sick of going to all the weddings during the wedding season. You know, but it's actually very healthy in the Vedic time. Not now, because you don't even know the guy. Yeah, you know, it's like some second cousin's friends, you know, and you have to go and then, you know, like that. But back in the village time when you knew everyone, it was actually, you know, just bring everyone together and have festivals. And it was kind of, you know, created like a satisfaction for the heart.
It's just like one community.
Yeah, it was one community. Everyone knew each other. It was like constant.
Yeah, everybody knew each other.
Yeah. That's why it says, there's a saying that it takes a village to bring up a child. Mm. These days you don't even know, everyone doesn't know each other. That's why it's nice in the temple. You know, everyone's close and all the kids get together and it's all, you know. And that's healthy, that's the way it should be. ISKCON's recreating something which is becoming lost. So. Okay. Lord Krishna was lying down underneath the handcart in one corner of the courtyard. And although his little legs were as soft as leaves, when he struck the cart with his legs, it turned over and violently collapsed. The wheels separated from the axle, the hubs and spokes fell apart, and the pole of the handcart broke. On the cart, there were many little utensils made of various metals, and all of them scattered hither and thither. Mm. When Mother Yashoda and the other ladies who had assembled in the, for the Uttana festival, and all the men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, saw the wonderful situation, they began to wonder how the handcart had collapsed it by itself. They began to wander here and there, trying to find the cause, but were unable to do so. The assembled cowherd men and ladies began to contemplate how this thing had happened. Is it the work of some demon or evil planet? They asked. At that time, the small children present asserted that the cart had been kicked apart by the baby Krishna. As soon as the crying baby had kicked the cart's wheel, the cart had collapsed. There was no doubt about it. So this happens during Krishna's pastimes all the time. Quite often you'll see when the Yamalajud trees fell down, the children saw it happen. When Krishna was worshipped by Indra at Govindakund, the children saw it happen. So it happens all the time in the Vrindavan pastimes. The adults come along and they say, "What happened?" And the kids go, "Oh, yeah, you know, Krishna did this and he did that." And everyone's like, you know, they're telling stories or what took place. So this is Vrindavan pastime. So the children, they saw the little baby, he pushed. Because what happened is the demon, in the form of a ghost, he's like entered into the cart. And it's a big cart. It's like a huge cart. It's full of all gold and silver utensils. And then the demon has entered into the cart. And by the weight of the demon, the cart's began to sink down. And it's sinking down on Krishna. And then as it's coming close to Krishna, Krishna just takes his little foot and he goes, smashes it and descends, kills the demon, sends the whole thing. He actually tips the whole cart over. It just falls over and everything crashes on the ground. So it's like a huge uproar. So some of the children, they see that happen. So they understand that Krishna has done it and they just relate to Krishna. He's our friend. He can do anything like this. But all the adults are thinking. So it just creates rasa in the pastime. So Krishna can enjoy with all the bridge buses. The assembled gopis and gopas, unaware that Krishna is always unlimited, could not believe that the baby had such inconceivable power. They could not believe the statements of the children, and therefore they neglected these statements as being childish talk. Thinking that some bad planet had attacked Krishna, Mother Yashoda picked up the crying child and allowed him to suck her breast. Then she called for experienced brahmanas to chant Vedic hymns and perform an auspicious ritualistic ceremony. So she calls the brahmanas. The brahmanas are there to create spiritual sound. Spiritual sound creates an auspicious atmosphere. So that's why when there are, in ISKCON we don't say brahmanas, we just say advanced Vaishnavas. Like Burujampuru is coming in a few days. And is anyone here at the moment? No one's here at the moment. But, you know, there's always Swamis. Gambano Swami was just here and, you know, different Swami. So these auspicious personalities, why are they auspicious? Because they carry Krishna in their heart. They have attachment to Krishna. And when they speak and chant Vedic mantras, spiritual sound, it purifies the atmosphere. And Krishna enters that atmosphere. And the Bhagavatam says, Krishna is found where devotees are conversing about Krishna. Now, Krishna says that in the Chaturshloki, the Bhagavatam. What is that verse? Machchita, Magadha Prana, Parasparam, Katayantas, Kata. Now, Krishna says right in the Chaturshloki of the Gita, same thing. Vasudev Kata Ruchi, Tushanticha Ramanticha, Kata. When you hear about Krishna, then Krishna enters that atmosphere. Krishna becomes present and everything becomes auspicious, becomes spiritualized. So that is the safest place in the material world, when Krishna is being glorified. Yeah, that's the verse. After the strong, stout cowherd men assembled the pots and paraphernalia on their handcart and set it up as before, the brahmanas performed a ritualistic ceremony with a fire sacrifice to appease the bad planet And then the rice grains, kusha, water, and curd, they worship the Supreme Lord. So what happens these days when something breaks? What do? Throw it in the bin. What do the cowherd men do? They go and fix the cart. And that's why we have problems in our modern life. And I see devotees, they throw so much stuff away. I can't believe all the devotees, you know, using these paper plates and everything. Everything's disposable. Just throw it away. We don't understand what this is actually doing to the earth. Devotees don't think. You know, I see devotees come here all the time. They've got like four plates piled up on top of each other and just walking back down the road. It costs the temple 50,000. I've said this 100 times. No one takes any notice. It doesn't matter. But it costs the temple $50,000 a year for those paper plates. $50,000 every year for those paper plates. I probably use 6 of those paper plates in a year. You know, and that's only sometimes. Very rarely I use them. Very rarely. You know, I bring a metal plate. And if every devotee in our community did that, we cut that bill down to $20,000 a year. That's $30,000 we could use for the deities. And people are so wasteful. I see devotees all the time. They just waste everything. Something breaks, just throw it in the bin. Like that. But yeah, you know, the cowherd men, as soon as something broke, everyone got there and they all fixed it up together and then back together. Hare Krishna. When brahmanas are free from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbance, by the opulence of others and false prestige, their blessings never go in vain. Considering this, Nanda Maharaj soberly took Krishna on his lap and invited such truthful brahmanas to perform a ritualistic ceremony according to the holy hymns of the Sama, Veda, Rig Veda and Yajur Veda. Then, while the hymns were being chanted, he bathed the child with water mixed with pure herbs. And after performing a fire ceremony, he sumptuously fed all the brahmanas with first-class grains and food. So Prabhupada, basically in the purport, he glorifies Vedic culture. What were they using? They were using Aushadhi. Aushadhi means? Medicine, yeah, herbs. It means Ayurvedic herbs, that's what it actually means. Just like the other day, upstairs, ashwagandha, you know that Ayurvedic herb called ashwagandha? Very powerful. So we grew that at the farm. Dhyanatai gave me some ashwagandha, right, which we grew at the farm. Very powerful herb I'm taking. There's another one called Brahmi. Now you've heard of Brahmi? Also very powerful. But he ground it at the farm, he gave it to me. I took a teaspoon of it. I was only supposed to take a fifth of a teaspoon. And then I had diarrhea and I was throwing up. And you know, the Vyasa Puji the other day?
Yeah, that's why you were sick.
Yeah, that's why I was sick. Because the dog gave me this medicine in the morning. But if you take too much, it purifies everything. So I felt very good the next day. But I just said to him, next time tell me, you know, so I can plan. Huh? He said he told me 6 months ago. So. So apparently I forgot to do it. So.
What does ashwagandha do?
Ashwagandha gives strength to the body, nourishes the nerves, does many things, builds tissue, does many things. Mm-hmm. So basically what the Vedic culture is teaching is we should use Ayurvedic herbs, not Disprin and Panadol.
Brahmi is very good for the
Yeah, it's famous for that, but it's actually good for many, many things. It's also very good for the nerves. It's also very good for healing things. Does many things, but it's famous for what it does for the brain.
One used to prepare oil from Brahmi and then apply for the daughters.
Yeah. I mean, so basically it's saying Ayurvedic herbs. And Prabhupada himself, if you read Harisori Prabhu's diary, he wouldn't take Western medicine. Very good. And I personally haven't taken Western medicine, I'd say in the last 20 years, I've probably taken once or twice, maybe something. I just don't touch the stuff. Because, you know, 200,000 people every year in America die from Western medicine. You go to the doctors, they give you something, 200,000 people, they don't tell you that. But 200,000 people die every year from medicines which are, you know, Western allopathic medicine. I never touch the stuff. It's all, and you know, now, you know, next year my daughter has to have injections. The school tells you. Yeah, like the shots, vaccinations, they're dangerous, those things. We don't actually know what they're putting into those. Yeah, and the government makes you do it to your kid. You're said to be a rebel if you don't do it, but you don't know what's going into the kid.
And now they've said that if you don't do it, so you won't get any child support or any child care.
Yeah, that's what they've said.
Congress passing a bill now.
Yeah.
So if you don't do any vaccination, yeah, you're on your own. You don't get any support from the government.
Yeah, they're saying that. And
the government will save $140 billion from just doing that.
Yeah. And there's connection between, they've done tests, it's not exclusively proven, but they're saying autism, because there's a 900% rise in autism in children. They're saying it's directly connected to the vaccinations. So it's like,
I heard it in cancer.
Yeah, well, who knows? God knows what they're doing to us. So anyway, so what does it say here in the Bhagavad Gita? Ayurvedic herbs. Says that Aushadhi means medicines. They're bathing Krishna with herbs. They put the herbs in the water and they bathe Krishna with these herbs. It doesn't say Panadol and Disprin. Which verse are we on? 16? Okay. Nanda Maharaj, for the sake of the affluence of his son, of his own son Krishna, gave the Brahmanas cows fully decorated with garments, flower garlands and gold necklaces. These cows, fully qualified to give ample milk, were given to the Brahmanas in charity, and the Brahmanas accepted them and bestowed blessings upon the whole family, and especially upon Krishna. The Brahmanas, who were completely expert in chanting the Vedic hymns, were all yogis fully equipped with mystic powers. Whatever blessings they spoke were certainly never fruitless. So this is the system. What did Nanda Maharaj do to get blessings for his child? What do you do if you have a child? How do you get blessings? Yeah, you feed the Vaishnavas and you give them gifts. That's the system. Same system now as it was 5,000 years ago. Right? You have a kid, what do? You start giving out charity to all the devotees, right? And you feed all the devotees, have a big feast and make sure everyone's satisfied and happy. And that invokes, that's basically the principle, as Rupa Goswami teaches us. Give gifts in charity, receive gifts, give prasadam, receive prasadam. Like that. That's basically the system. And how do you know if someone's a brahmana, if they have potency? How does a brahmana become potent? By austerity. Tapasya. Right? You'll see, the advanced devotees now movement, they've done tapasya for Prabhupada. Right? And by doing tapasya for the guru, you become potent as a devotee. That's why it says the power of a brahmana is tapasya. The brahmanas can do austerities. And you see all these advanced devotees who come to our temples. Or you even see the advanced devotees in our temples. They're doing austerity for Krishna. And they become very powerful because of that. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki. And tomorrow night I'll try to... I really hope I brought that book. Tomorrow night I'll tell you what Shakadasura represents. And tomorrow we'll hear about Trinavata also. It's not the book, but it's from Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which is a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we're going to have the first exam at the end of chapter 8. We're going to finish chapter 8 next week, I think. So the exam will be very soon. About 2 weeks or 3 weeks will be an exam.
I didn't get the last exam thing.
Oh, yeah, I didn't give back the last exams from Canada. I haven't marked them yet. I'll give them to you. I'll give them to you soon. Oh, good. You're the only one who brings me. Of course, I'm going to go.